But now I'm joined on the programme by Angela Dunlop, who's a psychic medium. So, yeah, what's a psychic medium, Angela?
So I work as a medium, and basically my work is clients come to me through a demonstration where there's a large crowd, which I'm going to be doing on that academy, or on a one-to-one basis where I bring three loved ones from spirit. So they're deceased loved ones coming through, having a chat with them, bringing back memories, descriptions, maybe how they passed. Sometimes I get names, surnames, and then hopefully the person in front of me understands the majority of what I'm sharing, and then they know that their loved ones are safe and well. So okay. That's the difference between a psychic is somebody who just talks about kind of someone's life in a past, present, future aspect, where the difference in my work is that I bring loved ones through from spirit.
Okay, 07491 25000, if anyone wants to give us a call and maybe speak to Angela. Now, Angela, just to get it out of the road and for the interest of balance, we, of course, have the likes of John Edwards, who does this type of thing, who'd be very, very popular. But then we have people like Darren Brown, who says and has done the same thing, but he claims that he can do it using techniques that are not psychic. So just to give you an opportunity to perhaps convince us that you can do this if you want to, or if you can.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working now 10 years as a medium. I started whenever I was 24, and then I branched out when I was 26 to start working in it. And I always thought it might have been like a really scary experience. I thought that I actually had no interest in mediumship initially, that I actually wanted to be a DJ, and I was doing loads of DJing in clubs, etc. And I went along to a spiritualist church in Belfast just out of interest. I had nobody really at that point in my life who was passed over, and they were running awareness classes. So I went along to their awareness classes, and I started to do a link for a girl who was sitting in front of me. There was a medium that said to me, try and see if you can bring somebody through from spirit. Well, I had never had any experience with this before, so I didn't know the young girl in front of me. And as I looked at her, I just felt this impression of her father. And I said, "Have you got a dad in spirit?" And she said, "Yes." And I could see him within my mind's eye, and he looked at me as if he was around 50s. And she confirmed this, and I told her how I could see him, and he had a bald head, and then he gave me like palpitations in my heart, but loads of pains.
Mm-hmm.
So in her, he must have went with a heart attack, and I shared that with her, and she said yes. So I was getting this reel of information that was coming through me. I understand where you're coming from, the Darren Brown, but the techniques, I don't know what he uses, but I just know the experience that I have.
I think just from bits I've read is that maybe he has plants early on that pretend that they're in the audience and would converse with other audience members, and that's part of it.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been working now for 10 years. There's never a moment where it's frightening. I've had some of the most extraordinary experiences with people coming to me. I love reading people that I don't know at all, because it makes it more real. It's validating for me as well, you see. So, yeah. And you have to have integrity for people. You know, this is the type of work where people can be vulnerable. They're emotional, they're grieving.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's a huge... Before I say the next question, if someone wants to maybe try this with Angela, 07491 25000, there's a great responsibility with what you do, Angela.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even what you share with people, a lot of people cling on to your words of what you're trying to share with them. So, you know, you have to have responsibility in this work, as well as being honest with them. You know, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you just have to say, "Listen, I don't have anybody here today." But for the most part, there is always somebody there that wishes to say hello, even for the biggest skeptics. And I have to be honest, I love reading skeptics, because people normally come to me with an open mind, and that's super. Some people come to me and they look at me really suspiciously, and I'm used to that. So I just try my best to relax them so I can relax with them. And then I just tell them that we'll give it a go, see what happens. And normally there's loved ones that will come through, and there's been loads of people that have been in some ways blown away by what's being shared. And it's not necessarily me, it's coming through me. I think that's what people need to understand. It's what the impression that I'm having. It's like if I was to ask you now, Greg, to imagine an apple tree with big rosy red apples and green leaves on it, right away your imagination can see that in your mind's eye. It's the same way with the sport world. They put impressions on me. They give me feelings. Sometimes I do hear voices. Now, that sounds a little bit strange, but it would only be the odd, like, maybe name that would come to me.
And do you have to... I'm not a skinny... I'm actually more afraid of this kind of stuff than I am sceptical of it, to be honest with you. But I'm not asking you to do anything with me, but in a conversation with me... would you have to get into a would you have to get into a zone and try and analyse my situation, or as we're conversing, are you picking things up?
As I'm conversing, I'm already picking things up.
Oh, I don't want to know. Look, Mary's on the phone. That's only because I'm scared. Mary, hello.
Good morning,
Mary. Now, Angela, do you want Mary to give you any information, or do you want to just maybe have a quick chat with her, or
if she can feel anything at all? I'm a great believer, and I have one that I go to on a regular basis, maybe a few times a year. I've been told I have a gift. I would see signs, and I would get feelings of things happening or before somebody would pass over. And I would be a great believer in it. But then you have the other ones that think that I'm totally crazy.
Right, okay. But so there's not... Angela, are you feeling anything with Mary there? I mean, she's obviously a believer, so...
Yeah, you can hear in her voice that she's obviously very passionate about this sort of work, and there's been lots of, I'm sure there's been lots of losses in her life that undermined up to this work, you know, so a lot of people that do come through a grief, they do look for another solution, and that's when mediums step in. It wouldn't surprise me that she does get signs, and would your dad be past, Mary?
That's what I don't know. I've been told that he has. But I've never met him.
Would there be a connection with your father to England, do you know?
Yes.
Because I felt like your dad, I feel like your father's here, and I felt like that he had went to England. Do you know if he would have ever worked to do with boats or ships in his day?
I think he did, yes.
Or are you not sure?
I think he was an engineer.
Okay. And does the name James or Jim connect with your father, do you know?
Yeah.
Because I keep hearing the name of Jim, and I'm getting an impression you must have a daughter, Mary, and there must be concerns or real worries over a daughter. Now, I don't feel she's too young, I feel like she's adult.
Yeah.
But it feels like, just to give you a bit more information on that it's to do with her personal side of her life. I don't think that she's come through the easiest of times recently.
Yes.
And I feel that's why the sport world are here. It's just have you fell out with your daughter, not too recent, but a little while back ago, because of this whole relationship problem?
Yeah.
I felt like that you were trying to maybe get in there a little bit, and the daughter... There's just a sense of where she has been pulling back from you and didn't want too many family members, not just you, with other family members as well. So whoever it is that she's dating or seeing or with at the moment, I don't feel like he's the most easygoing of fellas for, or I actually feel it's a little bit of an abusive relationship, and that's why the concern comes in there. So I feel like the sport world...
But that's ended now.
Yeah, but there's... It has ended, okay.
Yes.
Is there a lady by the name of Lily that's passed that you would know as well, Mary? There's an older lady that's here with me, or Elizabeth, because that's what it would be shortened for.
Yeah.
I see her to be much older. She's not a young woman and small.
Yeah.
She's got, like, white hair in the way that I see her.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't think she was overly close to you. I feel like she was family, but it's not a close family member.
Now, Angela, other people want to come in. I think, Mary, the initial question is Mary's father still alive, or is he in the spirit world, as far as you can determine, Angela?
I feel he's passed.
Okay.
Thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Mary.
You're
okay.
Very welcome. Pleasure.
Thank you very much for that. So without going into anything personal, what are you getting from me, Angela?
I felt like there was... now you're interested.
I am. Well, I was always interested, but I'm fearful and I don't want my private life.
I'll not open your private life out too much, but I felt that there was a father or somebody that was an influence, like a dad to you, that has passed over, but was incredibly kind, private. Was there someone who was a farmer that would have connected you or had farming connections in the family?
No.
I could see that this gentleman...
I'll come back and explain that to you. I'll come back and mitigate on that in a second, but I want to bring Dolores in, if you don't mind, Angela. Hello, Dolores.
Oh, hello. Hi.
Thank you very much for joining us on the programme. We don't have much time for this, okay. But do you want to know anything? Does Angela feel anything about your father?
Yes, please.
Dolores.
Hello, Angela.
Hi, Dolores. How's it going?
Hi. Not so bad, thank you.
So you want to know about your dad?
Uh-huh, yeah. Or I've got other members as well, but particularly my dad.
Okay, so you're obviously very close to him. Would your dad have lost a lot of weight towards the end?
And
like he was very poorly, very sick?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And would he have been quite a quiet man, not too stern of a man or too strict? There's a very, very quiet feeling to him.
Maybe he would have, yeah.
Okay. Would there be a family of eight?
No.
He's talking about a family of eight. Did he come from eight?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
have you shown the name of... Is there someone called David or Davy that your father would have known?
No.
And also William?
Yeah, William is his name. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because... He's saying the name William, and also I felt like David was a friend, Dave, somebody that he would have known, but at least we got his name.
Lovely.
So mm-hmm. I also feel about him, to be honest, Dolores, your dad feels like quite a quiet gentleman, so mm-hmm. even coming forward like this, it would be highly unusual. I feel like he was a really old man when he passed over. He doesn't feel young to me, and I felt like he was unwell for quite a long time, not a very quick passing at the end.
Yes, yeah.
And that's I felt crazy. That he was looked after mainly at home, more so than hospital, or in a hospice.
Bit of both, but died okay. at home. Yeah, he died at home.
He's just shown me images in my mind of being looked after more at bed and people around him, family around him. But I feel he's okay. That's what I feel. Uh-huh. I feel he's okay and that he's with you. And just another little bit, because I know that Greg's keen to kind of move on. Uh-huh. Had you been thinking recently about changing your property or moving?
No, definitely not.
He's shown me a for sale sign in my mind. If it's not...
Oh, okay, I can take that. Yeah, I can take that, Angela. It's something else. Yeah.
That's okay, because sometimes I can misinterpret it a little bit, but as long as you can relate to that.
Yes.
Thank you, Dolores, and take the love of your dad, William, there.
Thank you very much, Angela. Thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Dolores. We have other calls coming through, but we can't take them because of time pressures. Yes, Angela, just my situation is, I mean, in a quite unique situation in that, and I'm very grateful and thankful of it, I don't have anyone that I knew personally that has passed away.
Sure.
So that might be something of a complication and maybe it would require a longer time to tease that out. It's very interesting. There's absolutely no doubt that you weren't overly general. You hit on a few things with both of our callers there and they certainly understood what you were trying to say. And there's more of that then for your show in the Old Orchard Inn in Letterkenny on Friday the 6th of February.
Yes, I can't wait. This Friday night at the Old Orchard Inn, and if anybody does want some tickets, you can get it from the hotel. And it's, I think the show begins at 8 and finishes around 10, and I think it's €15 for the ticket. So if anybody wants to come along and see me, that would be super.
Okay, Angela, listen, thanks very much for joining us on the programme, and maybe we'll be able to chat to you again in the future, if that's all right.
That would be lovely. Thank you so much, Greg.
Angela Dunlop there, who's a psychic medium. Back after these. Vincent Brown, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you too.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Very good. Last night, the People's Debate came to Letterkenny. How would you describe how the night went?
It went very well. We had a huge audience, 700 or so people. And they were very lively and they contributed really well. We agreed in advance of the debate and we agreed an agenda with the audience. We would take subjects in rotation in this particular order, and they stuck with that. And for the most part, they stuck with the 1 minute rule, speak for no longer than 1 minute. And it was very lively and at times quite funny.
And it's going to be broadcast on Wednesday. We'll talk about that, or remind listeners of that.
At the earlier time of 10 o'clock. We broadcast at 10 o'clock on Wednesdays. It's usually at 11 o'clock, but on every Wednesday we are at 10 o'clock.
Excellent. Why did you decide, or did your team decide, to engage in this process, the people's debates, and taking it around the country?
Well, we had the idea that we had started people's debates anyway in the studio in Dublin, and people were saying, well, why don't we go around the country? And we thought, well, we couldn't do this. And then we thought, yeah, we could do it. And we thought it was an opportunity to to facilitate people around the country to participate on a national forum on national issues and to give their views. And I think it's a public service and it's worthwhile doing.
There was no representation from Fine Gael last night in terms of elected representation. Was there? Were they invited?
No. Of course, yes. No. Fine Gael are refusing to attend. And they've given various reasons. They first of all indicated they would take part. Then they said that we changed the ball game. This was going to be election debate. Then we said, no, it wouldn't. We reverted back to original format. And they then came up with objected to us allowing people to rock up to debates. And they said no ordinary people anyway came to such debates. And also it was an opportunity only for in their wards, for politicians to throw shite at each other. And
it's a government bashing roadshow, probably, too. They thought it might end up being.
Perhaps, but the reality is that a huge number of people, large proportion of the people, are disillusioned with the present government. They're very angry with the present government. They voted for change in the last election, and they didn't get it. And it's not surprising that there is a lot of anger there, and that in most audiences would be comprised of people who want to express that anger.
And then you have the likes of Sinn Féin, who can go up on the stage, make all the promises that they want from the position of opposition, with never having actually had to make a decision at a national level in government in the Republic. So it effectively ends up being sort of like a promotional event for the likes of Sinn Féin to a lesser extent Fianna Fáil and independence.
Well, you can say that, but one of the reasons Fine Gael now claims that the debates are unbalanced. Well, the debates, of course, are unbalanced because they don't take part. And also, we offer them seats in the audience and they won't take part even in that. They won't arrange for their members to take part. So, of course, there's going to be a bias in the debates. Try to even out the bias and put a contrary position every now and again. But you say about Sinn Féin being able to make proposals without being in office. So that's what Fine Gael did. In every budget, I've made this point several times, in every budget speech that Enda Kenny made as leader of the opposition from 2002 onwards, the only thing he complained about was that government didn't do more of the same, didn't do more in terms of the policies that got us into trouble. And that's what oppositions do in our crazy electorates, in our crazy political system, in our crazy political culture. That's what they do.
And that's just part of the process, and that's what we have to accept, is really what you're saying there. As it relates to moderating an event like this, I presume it's complicated for you, given the fact that, you know, you're charged really with offering some balance.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Moderating these debates without Fine Gael there, does it make your job more difficult?
Yes, it does, and you have to put the contrary point of view, which often I'm uncomfortable doing. of course, these debates are unbalanced because Fine Gael make them unbalanced.
There are a few callers suggesting that not enough time was given over to issues of health and the health system, particularly given the difficulties that we're facing here in the Northwest. Obviously, it's difficult to accommodate everything, but would you accept that perhaps maybe more time could have been given over to discussing health?
I'm surprised at that because the last 15 minutes was given over almost entirely to health. And we do edit back the programme. We recorded 95 minutes. We have to cut it back to 85 minutes, and we'll keep in that the stuff on the material on health. For a lot of people, spoke really well on issues to do with health towards the end of the program.
What did Vincent think about when he asked Piers Doherty would he accept the minister's post if they were the minority party? He seemed very reluctant to give him a straight answer. Does that resonate with you?
Yes.
What was your opinion of that?
Politicians start a bit, and then when they're pushed and contradictions could possibly emerge, they try to fudge. But this is true of all politicians.
When I watched your programme recently, you know, you're very good at putting pressure on government ministers, and Fianna Fáil's probably kind of somewhat easy too, given their recent record. And when they fail to answer, you know, maybe come up with a clear answer, you're very, very quick to sort of make sure that everyone knows that they didn't answer. But I watched recently, and I think it was Sean Barrett was on with you, and there was another person who was on there. And when they're asked direct questions, they often get wishy-washy too. Maybe do they get off a little bit lighter? I mean,
Sean Barrett, who's Sean Barrett?
Richard Boyd Barrett, I believe it was.
Oh,
I beg your pardon.
Boyd, yeah.
Sean Barrett,
oh,
the rogue parts altogether.
No.
But the point
I'm saying is,
you know, when you try and pin them down to an actual...
Yeah, absolutely. They engage in just awful waffle and on and on and on. Reams of waffle, reams of claims that you, there's 200, there's 2,000 billion worth of natural resources out there in the Irish Sea, and if we only bothered with that, tax the wealthy, everybody earning over a million or whatever, and we can get loads of revenue. And it's utter rotten nonsense, and I again and again challenge that. Mm. And the far left, as one might call them, is trivialising politics. And there is a, in my opinion, there is a good left-wing scenario to unveil or to argue for, but they don't do the heavy lifting in terms of policy analysis and decisions that would need to make that credible.
Mm. And do you think then the political system in Ireland is fundamentally flawed then?
Yes. Fundamentally what Irish politics is about, which crowd gets the big job.
Mm.
And it's that's almost all it is about. It's not about policies. It's not about trying to persuade people to change their minds on, for instance, a more equal society or whatever. It's about how can we calibrate our policies as to win a government position in the next election. That's what it's about, and it's like it's hopeless. And
do you think that in 2 years' time, Vincent, you'll be starting your programme talking about the issue of the day, saying that we invited Sinn Féin onto the programme, but unfortunately they were unable to make it, or, you know, having a Sinn Féin representative on and saying, well, you said you'd tax this person, you said you would scrap that, here we are 2-3 years in and you haven't done that. Is that what you expect to be doing in 2 or 3 years?
Yes.
Are you looking forward to that?
No.
But you do it nonetheless.
We have to. What else are we doing?
Indeed. Vincent, your programme itself, the regular scheduled programme, particularly in social media, I mean, obviously it's an absolutely massive hit. And, you know, I mean, I would argue it's almost equally entertainment as much as news, and I hope you don't consider that an insult.
No, I think that the challenge of journalism always is to deal with issues that matter in a way that people are drawn into. And whether you're writing or whether you're broadcasting, radio or television or whatever, that's the trick. And if you're broadcasting in a way that nobody wants to listen to or people are bored by, it doesn't work. And the trick is to do so in a way that people that engages people.
Mm. The programme broadcast that you recorded last night, slightly condensed obviously because of the pressures of time and what have you, will be broadcast on TV3 at the earlier time of 10 this coming Wednesday.
That's right, yes.
And you've you described it as, a very positive debate, a bit of wit in there as well, as you'd expect.
Yes, I thought it was a really great debate, and a very large number of people participated from the floor. Often what's called audience debates involves important people taking up 75% of the time, and then a token voices from the audience. But we've turned it around. that about 75% is given to audience participation and 25% to panels. And we had a very large number of people participate last night.
And do you know what? I mean, media, you know, they've got local media, national media, and the state media, not the state media, but the likes of RTE. It's great to see TV3 and your programme itself actually coming up to Donegal, because so often we're talked about, but so rarely visited.
Yeah, a lot of people made that point. But we're going to every one of the 40 constituencies. Donegal was the fourth constituency we've gone to. And we'll do that in 2015, and we'll probably do about three constituencies we're left over in 2016. But we're going to all 40 constituencies.
Okay. Vincent Brown, a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that is TV3's Vincent Brown there. That show broadcasts next Sunday. Next Wednesday, at 10 a.m. We thank Vincent for chatting to us. Okay, moving on in the programme now, and a newspaper article posed the question during the week, is juicing making you fat? Which is an interesting question, to say the least. So to discuss this, we're joined by Jackie Lynch, a nutritionist who contributed to the piece, and she joins us on the programme now. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Greg.
Very nice to speak with you. So the question was posed, is juicing making you fat? What is the answer?
Well, the answer in a nutshell is that you need to be very careful about juicing, particularly if it's a fruit juice or it's a fruit-heavy juice. The problem with juicing, in essence, is that it's taken all the fleshy pulp from the fruit, which is the highly sugared bit, which contains fructose, which is fruit sugar, but still sugar. And it's removed the fibre. And fibre is what will help neutralise the impact of sugar on the body. Many people tend to get confused when it comes to weight management programmes and assume that dietary fat is the biggest problem.
In fairness, though, that's kind of what we feel we're being told, isn't it? And it's a lack of understanding. And a lot of us taking the first step say, well, I'll try and get my five a day, I'll eat the fruit juices and everything will be fine. But we really need to look behind the headlines, so to speak, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. Sugar's the single biggest factor when it comes to weight gain. That's the first thing. And many people make the common mistake of giving up some of the sugary sodas that they might be drinking regularly and thinking they're doing themselves a favour by having two or three glasses of juice during the course of a day. You need to realise that just a couple of small glasses of orange juice, for example, contains exactly the same amount of sugar as a can of regular Coke.
So is there good and bad sugars then?
Not really. Sugar is sugar. And we need to realise that whether it comes in the form of a bar of chocolate or by having a glass of orange juice, the impact on the body will be the same. Sugar will go straight to the waistline when eaten in excess. That's not to say we shouldn't ever eat any sugar, of course. But if you are taking in a lot of sugar over the course of the day, it will impact your weight.
So then what's the advice? Is it to drink your smoothies or your liquidated fruit if you're doing a certain amount of exercise, or is it a case of limiting how many of them you consume in the first instance?
Well, one of the best ways to go about it is try and change the balance towards vegetable juicing rather than fruit juicing. If you can put more vegetables in your juice, you're dramatically going to be reducing the amount of sugar you're having. And to be fair, it's a great way of encouraging people to get part of their five a day. Not everybody loves eating fruit and vegetables, and I do realise that. So having some form of juice that might be a mixture of fruit and vegetable at some point in the day is great. If you're having several glasses of it throughout the day and a large proportion of it is fruit, that's when you might be laying yourself down for problems.
As a nutritionist, does it frustrate you, the obvious obvious amount of misinformation out there?
I think it's really hard because there's a lot of information out there, and in many cases in the media they're looking to promote one or other type of angle just to give a good story, so that the average person in the street just trying to work out what is healthy can find it an absolute minefield. In many ways it goes back to what our parents would say, which is moderation in everything. A little bit of what you fancy won't do you any harm, but if you're having a lot of any one type of nutrient, in this case sugar, it will have an impact.
The article also flagged concerns as it relates to juicers being breeding grounds for nasty bugs. Is that within your area of expertise to comment? I mean, it sounds logical. If you're not cleaning them out properly, well, the dangers seem obvious.
Well, I think that's always going to be a concern with any piece of equipment that's relating to food, whether it's a food processor, a blender or a juicer. It's certainly true that anybody who's ever tried juicing at home knows that the most painful thing about it is washing it up afterwards. But the good news is that a lot of the more modern juicers only come in two or three pieces now, so it's not quite so complex to make sure that you're scrubbing down every single piece. But of course, I'd always encourage people to make sure they're watching out for the hygiene, because that's just basic common sense.
So finally, Jackie, in a nutshell, try and eat fruit whole and juice your veg.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us on the programme. It's been a pleasure. Geraldine Timlin. Hi, Geraldine.
Hi, Greg.
Sorry for holding you there. I hope you don't have a cramp in your arm, do you, holding the phone
to your
ear?
Not at all.
The Free Wee Library Project. Give us the background. It was established in Buncrana in 2013, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it began back in May 2013 as a project to coincide with Feel Good Fortnight, which was running the local community, which was basically about encouraging people within the community and artists to come up with ideas of adding something positive to the community.
And how does it work?
So basically we built little wooden structures, and they were designed by Paddy Doherty, which is a local tradesman, and we placed them in public spaces. They're stocked with books for adults and children, and it functions on an honesty policy. So basically, the signage on it states that, and all that's asked from you is if you take a book, that you return a book.
It's a fantastic idea of sort of, you know, I presume it may start off, or maybe it doesn't, but, you know, with a varied type of book that maybe not everyone's has read before, maybe wouldn't go to in the first place. They open it up, they say, oh, I might have a go at that one, and throw another one in saying, well, maybe I'm introducing someone else to a new genre or a new author.
Yeah, there's such a wide, varied reading taste, I suppose, and it's open to everyone in the community. It's also available for tourists and visitors to the area. So, I mean, you've got so many people donating books, and you've got such a wide reading range, so that, you know, you don't, it's not really any particular genre that's there. You know, that's the nice thing about it.
And you say it's based on trust, and I presume normally things when they are based on trust, that they generally work.
Yeah, it's worked really well so far. Now, I mean, it's up now since May 2013, so we're heading into our second year. And people have been very good in using it as it's requested. There were stages like last summer when the weather was really good that the boxes kind of were empty.
Mm.
But I looked at that as a very positive thing. So people were actually using them and reading, you know, which is the aim of the project. Like, it's also part of it. It's we look at it more than just a box holding books. There are wider aims of the project, which obviously to promote literacy and the love of reading, and to get children familiar with books in their community from a very young age. Also to provide opportunities for employment for tradespeople to help make these units, to improve the design and understanding of our public space, because sometimes we tend to go to public space, we're either jogging through it or running through it, and we don't take time to actually sit down and absorb what's around us. And the positioning of the libraries in the scenic areas has encouraged people to sort of slow down and, you know, take...
Well, you can find one of the boxes, if the weather's good, obviously, pick a book, yeah, sit on a bench, read a chapter with this amazing scenery. I mean, now I'm going to be honest, I'm not a massive book reader, but it sounds like a delightful idea.
Yeah, I mean, it has encouraged non-readers to, you know, start taking, or people who maybe have read little, to encourage them to read a little bit more. Some people use it like that, sitting by the bench that's, you know, near the libraries. Other people are obviously taking books home, reading books and then returning books. So, I mean, we have them dotted along the coastal walk here in Swan Park. We also have one at Dunree Fort, one in Moville. There are two in Dublin, one in the Sandymount Hotel, and one that we gifted to President Higgins when he was here visiting in September. Every week we're getting more and more inquiries about people getting involved in the project too, so that's
And obviously we're in a digital age. Lots of people have their readers and they consume books that way. And look, as long as they're reading, it's all good in the hood, I suppose you could say. But is there a love particularly for you of the physical book and sort of retaining that? And we know book sales are still very high. Or is this really just about getting people reading?
I suppose I love the physical book. I mean, I can see there's a place for Kindles and people, you know, reading in that way. But I suppose it's the waste reduction element of it too. It's trying to get people sort of sharing and reusing what's already in circulation. And as I said, it's the wider aim of this project, which is to get people outside exercising, which is encouraging, you know, positive mental health as well, because, I mean, research has shown that reading 2 or 3 times per week is associated with stress reduction and lowers your risk of dementia. So if you couple that, the reading activity, with the exercise, walking to the various locations of the library, then you're onto a winning combination.
Definitely. And I've seen the little book holders, pictures of them, and even that in itself is a lovely little addition to the landscape.
They are aesthetic. They're beautifully made by Paddy Doherty, as I said. And, I mean, he's a very talented tradesperson. And we're now, in the next month, going to be running a training course for unemployed tradesmen to get involved in making these units as well, which Paddy will be transferring his skills to them.
Thank you so much, Geraldine. It's been great talking to you. Thank you very much for joining us on the Weekend Edition.
Okay, thank you very
much. Take care.